The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to Report from Europe. This is Mike Consul. On the phone with me from England is Richard Fleming, editor of Institutional Real Estate Europe. And we are here to talk, Richard, about your article. First of all, top of the morning to you, Richard, or top of the evening to you. We're out at Mother England.
Yes, good morning, Mike, and good evening to everyone in Europe.
So you wrote an article called What's Next? It really kind of tackles the eternal question of what's coming next. And there are certain things that we kind of understand are going to be next. We just don't know the timing, such as an eventual downturn in the economy again. But there are just a plethora, and I think this is probably what motivated the writing of the article, Richard, but I'll leave that for you to answer. There's just a plethora of economic and political and social forces that are at play right now. There's such a proliferation of them. It's really made trying to even cryptocurrencies and, you know, what's going to happen with those and what kind of effect is that going to have? And we have counterfeiting laws in this country and other countries. It's really pretty wild out there right now. But let's take it one step at a time. What motivated you to write the article to start with?
You always write an article like this at this time of year because we like to look ahead to what's coming. And of course, when you're writing something that's called What's Next, it's like one of those, as you said, eternal questions. No one knows what's next. But you have to sit down and think about it and work out what could possibly happen next. And we still don't know. But there are certain things happening out there that give us a feel for what could happen next. And that's what I try to do.
So there are these, you know, great unknowns, not to sound like our former Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, but the known knowns, the great unknowns, and the unknown unknowns, and so on and so forth. Summarize some of the things that you ticked off in the article in terms of some of the unknowns that right now are facing the European economy as well as global economies.
Well, I took it both from a global and a European perspective. I think you're right. It's the Rumsfeldisms, the known knowns, and the unknowns that we can deal with. Known knowns are, in European terms, primarily to do with the state of the European Union, the things that are happening around Brexit, and that changes day on day, so I don't want to talk too much about Brexit, but it may be that in a couple of weeks' time we will know a lot more. We still have the migrant crisis in Europe, which is causing concerns in some countries, principally Germany, which took in nearly 1 million of these people from all parts of the world in the past 2 years, and now has them there and doesn't really seem to be dealing with their influx very well, which is why Chancellor Merkel didn't do very well in the September election. Since I wrote that article, of course, Chancellor Merkel has had problems actually putting together a coalition government. The efforts with the Greens and the FDP, the right-wing centre party, came to nothing. And now she is talking again with the centre-left parties and others. And whether we will need a new election or not remains to be seen. What else is going on? Oh, yes, we have the irritating Visegrad countries in Central and Eastern Europe. I say irritating because they are chipping away at what the European Union regards as the very foundation of the EU's existence. There are things they don't like. They don't like being told that they've got to accept a certain number of migrants. They don't like being told that they're not allowed to change their laws. And what else is going on? We still have populism, we still have nationalism, we have right-wing movements across Europe, and President Trump, I'm afraid, is not helping with his tweeting. We have had national elections recently in Austria and Czech Republic, both of which have resulted in more right-wing administrations. We have possibly the expansion of the Eurozone from the current 19 countries to include those that are not yet in the zone. When all that happens, maybe they'll be talking about fiscal union. That will be fun. And then we have reform of the EU or not. So there's a lot of things there that are happening, could be happening even more.
Now, your story also references the wall of money waiting to be invested in European real estate. And so give us some sense of scale as to this uncalled capital or these uncommitted investment dollars and what those dollars are waiting for. How big is this wall of money in dollar or euro terms? And they're waiting for placement, obviously, but do you have any sense for what exactly they're looking for in terms of real estate property types or regions and so on?
I can't give you an actual number for the wall of money, but they call it a wall of money, so it must be substantial. It's in the hundreds, certainly, of billions of dollars, euros, whatever you call it. It is waiting because it cannot be invested. The people, presumably, who have got that wall of money are looking for the kind of properties that simply are not available at the kind of prices that they're willing to pay. So they're waiting around for things to happen. And, of course, with markets being as they are today, with stock markets being at a record high, with a fairly benign economic environment, there's not much to suggest that real estate pricing will come down. Not yet. But I was at a conference in Amsterdam last week, the InRev Autumn Conference, and the economist speaker there from Berenberg did say that there were signs that the U.S. would have a recession in 2 years' time. And that might just start to make things happen.
Yeah, that's, of course, one of the major bits of speculation. When is the economy going to take a downturn? It's been this, I believe, within the next couple, 3 months, it'll be the second longest economic expansion in U.S. history. And it certainly caused for concern. A lot of investors taking defensive postures. That wall of money you're talking about, I just wonder if that isn't going to end up being a vulture fund or funds. Obviously, just a whole panoply of different investors have the money there. But when there is a correction and those prices come down, there's going to be some good opportunities, I would imagine. So, and let's be clear, there's always uncalled capital sitting out there waiting. But I'm wondering, Richard, if you are hearing anything from your sources as to, is it actually the prices that are forestalling the deployment of the money, or is it that there's a limited real estate stock that's still available of the quality that they're looking for?
I think it's the latter. There's simply a shortage of stock, of the kind of stock that people want, the income-producing, long-term tenant type of stock. People don't want necessarily to go into the value-add opportunistic spheres. They'd rather stay core and core plus. And those properties just aren't available in the numbers that they need.
Now, I don't fancy myself a student of economic history, but it does seem to me that the role of central banks is as big or bigger than it's ever been in history. The central banks have played such a central, as the name implies, an integral role in trying to bring economies back, trying to stimulate forward, trying to hold off deflation, and trying to actually get some more economic activity going. You know, what do you see as of this stage? Obviously, the central banks, some central banks were big into the quantitative easing or stimulus strategy. As of now, what role do you see the central banks playing?
I think the central banks are playing it quiet for the moment. The Fed has been increasing rates pretty steadily over the last, 18 months. And we hear that there's going to be more increases in the pipeline over the next year or so. The ECB, for its part, the European Central Bank, has done QE to a large degree, but is now starting to think about tapering off on that. But there's no suggestion in Europe, in mainland Europe, of an increase in interest rates just yet. The Bank of England did increase interest rates a couple of weeks ago, from 0.25% to 0.5%, but that was simply a reversal of the post-Brexit vote reduction that they implemented to stabilize the market. So there's not much suggestion of a sharp rise in interest rates anytime soon.
Let me ask you about taxes, Richard. You know there's a furious effort being made right now by the Republican Party to push through a major tax cut, a major cut to the corporate rate, all the way down to 20% from, I believe it's 35 or 39%. The effective rate, though, people argue, is really only 15%. Nobody's paying 39 or 35%. And there are people worried. There's several things that are of concern. One being that it could increase the deficit by $1 trillion or more. And also that if we do have a downturn, what tool is left in the federal government's tool chest to combat this? And then finally, there's also just the question about whether we really need a stimulus of this sort right now when the economy seems to be doing quite well. Being a large economy like the United States is, 2% growth is not chump change anymore. But we're talking about Europe. So the reason I bring this up is there any movement afoot in Europe? We seem to have an obsession here in the United States with cutting taxes. What's the state of the tax situation in Europe? And are there any opinions being aired in Europe about what the likely effect might be of a U.S. tax cut of this magnitude?
We don't hear too much about that at the moment. There certainly is not any suggestion in Europe that tax cuts are on the horizon. Everyone and everything seems very stable at the moment. Inflation is pretty much under control, although it is under target. The ECB had a 2% target, and I think roughly at the moment Eurozone inflation is around about 1.6. But it's not deflation anymore, and that's important.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, go ahead with that, Richard. I often say to people, if you think inflation is scary, you haven't seen deflation. But go ahead with that.
Yes, deflation was a worry about 18 months ago, but they turned a corner on that, and it's settled now. Obviously, it varies by country, but in general, across the Eurozone and then across the wider EU, inflation is under control, and it doesn't seem to be so much of a worry anymore.
You also take into account geopolitical risks. To talk a little bit about the geopolitical risks that you see out there.
You can ask me about geopolitical risks today, and it would probably be a different answer to what it would have been, say, last month or even 2 months ago. When I wrote the article 2 months ago, I identified main political risks of geopolitical risks of the moment as being Russia, Turkey, Iran, North Korea, China. And then I added the United States and Iran because that blew up again. And then I added Spain and Catalonia because all of a sudden that independence referendum was a problem. Do I now need to add anything else? Because I don't know what's around the corner. Russia, we always bring Russia up because we're not quite sure what President Putin is doing. It seems that in the Middle East he's doing very well and has outmaneuvered comprehensively the United States. In politics, his military forces are agitating. We know about eastern Ukraine. The rebels still are a force. We have the FIFA World Cup in Russia next year, and we've had the draw for that today in Europe. We're all very excited by that. You won't be in the States, of course. You're not in it.
Now, the United States is not in the next World Cup. We've been competing in the World Cup. Why are we not in the next one? Did we just not make the... We didn't qualify?
Yeah, I'm afraid you did not qualify.
That's the men's team. This is strictly the men's... our women's team's always good. The men's team is always at the best lackluster. And this is strictly the men's football teams. Is that right?
That's right. If it's any consolation, you're in some good company there because neither Italy nor the Netherlands qualified, and that was a great surprise.
Wow, and Italy won it just how many years ago? Just a handful of years ago, Italy won the World Cup. So, things change quickly. As your whole article alludes to these fast changes. So one of the sources that you quote in the article suggests that European investors have divorced politics from the underlying economic and market fundamentals, that they just kind of discount that as white noise. Maybe they have no choice in doing that. What is the current status of Europe's underlying economic and market fundamentals? So how is Europe doing right now, and what's the outlook from a market fundamental standpoint?
Well, I hope this doesn't come back to haunt me, but it's all looking pretty good at the moment. You're right, sometimes you do have to divorce the politics from the economics. We just have to get on with things. We have a life to live. We cannot simply wait around for the next crisis to happen. Although there are people out there saying that the next crisis is going to happen. But the trouble is we don't know which one, where it will be, what it will do, who it will affect. We have an idea. We had an idea 10 years ago when the global financial crisis started and led to the demise of Lehman Brothers. It could be that we're at that sort of point again, but we don't know what will be the catalyst for it.
You know, it's interesting that it reminds me of that African proverb. It is the path that you fear least, where the wild beast will get you. And we always worry about the next downturn, and we are always looking at certain indicators, and it never seems to be what we think it's going to be. It's always some surprise, it coming from a place that we didn't anticipate. And I remember before the last collapse, I remember seeing an economist get up there, he was talking about real estate, and he talked about the downturn in real estate and all the indicators that showed that downturn was going to happen. And they said, none of the indicators are there right now. The real estate economy is solid. It's good. There's no flashing red lights at all. We've got a clear runway ahead. Next thing we know, there's a huge collapse. So it just goes to show how unpredictable life really is. Now, your life maybe is a little bit more predictable, because what's next is not only an apropos title for this article, Richard, but also an apropos talking point for you, because I'm happy and sorry to say that you're going to be retiring as editor of Institutional Real Estate Europe and living a different life. What's next for Richard Fleming?
Again, I have to say that I don't know. Obviously, when you decide you're going to retire, you think you've got things planned, and my wife certainly has. But, we've got trips on the horizon. We've got things to do. We've got my father-in-law living next door. I think the time will be taken care of. And, of course, I'll still be keeping my hand in. You'll still, I think, be hearing from me.
So you'll continue to do some writing in some form that you're figuring, or some commentary?
That's the intention, certainly.
Well, congratulations, Richard. It's been great working with you. We'll, of course, stay in touch, but terrific to see that you're moving into a new lifestyle there. We wish you all the best, and thank you for taking the time and giving us some more insight into Europe.
Thanks, Mike. Good evening to you.